This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 294, Sheepish to the Max. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a Friday afternoon beset with technical difficulties, but you won't notice because we will have edited this masterpiece together without any problems, I hope. I'm here with my friend and co-host, as always, wonderful Michael Martin. Michael, how are you?
I am doing well, and now that I've got my coffee, I am doing even better. So thank you, Michael. And nothing like podcast where you have technical difficulties right as you're trying to get things working.
So, as you hit record. Because you remembered to hit record. That's the first technical problem you don't want to have.
Exactly. The big red button has been pressed. So, Yes. So let's get straight to it because we got all kinds of fun stuff. And as per usual, we are short on time and hopefully we're going to get through it all.
Sure we are.
Well, you never know. We might.
We'll give it a shot.
We do get excited about some topics. So that happens. The first one out of the gate, or maybe the starting gate, a little bit more about Mario Kart Live. So we've now talked about this a couple of times. This article from inputmag.com is talking about how Surrogate TV has an ability now to allow people in multiple socially distant places to race on the home circuit.
Yes.
Anywhere.
Anywhere.
And
The thing that I couldn't tell, I love the idea. Do you have to build the exact same circuit at two locations, or does it transfer the controls to control the second car from a remote location?
I don't know that for sure, but what kind of grabbed me on two levels was level one, you could build like this awesome racetrack and have people from somewhere else in the world physically, virtually, be there with you, right?
Yes.
So that was kind of neat. We know that the game itself has two cars, a Mario Kart and a Luigi Kart, and you could see the presence of somebody else in your house controlling the second car remotely, which would be kind of cool. The notion of having up to four people playing at once is also pretty cool, but here's where I go dark.
The fact that you have a remote person in your house with a camera driving around?
Ding!
That's exactly where my brain went immediately, right? It's like, this is a great idea, sorta. And then you said, and anyone in the world. And I'm like, okay, that's even worse. And you don't even have to know them. Great!
Well, you know, that could be the thing.
Which is why I asked, if it allowed you and I to set up the same course in our houses, roughly, and I drive mine in my house, and you drive yours in your house, but I see you in mine, and you see mine in yours, right? Just the virtual car. That would be okay. But you mail me through the postal service your car with a camera. I put it in my house, hook it up to my network. First security problem. The camera gets turned on. Second security problem. And then you remote control drive it around my house. I will take a large sledgehammer and just smash your car as it drives by.
Yeah, it'd be kind of fun to drive around and see what's going on in your house, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket with my wife, Morgan Fairchild.
Now, I don't, you know, the experience on Surrogate TV as I'm looking at it here seems to be it's a full game, in-game experience. So what seems to be the case is you're looking at a virtual course. Mm. However, it's not that far removed to do precisely what you and I were just talking about, which, you know, is right back in again in the robot that drives around with the iPad and then raises up and down, and you can interact with other people in the same way. So,
yes,
could happen.
It could. It won't. Not in my house. but it could.
Oh, I love it. So
very cool.
Let's shift gears.
Yes.
Or genres, perhaps. A little shift genres. To go to Star Wars Squadrons, another one of the games that's certainly making the rounds and having a lot of people excited about it. And I saw this article from Polygon.com talking about playing in a support role. So it was cool to read about the notion of not being the fighter bombers that are at the front of the hack and slash activity, right, to go and blow up other capital ships or other fighters or whatever, but to be in the support role, essentially the cleric kind of healer role in a game like this, where your job is to go around and help others recover.
This reminded me so much, which kicked off the thing that kicked off 12 plus years, now 14 years of podcasting in various forms. Dancing with Wookiees, right?
Dancing with Wookiees.
This is Star Wars Galaxies, the original MMO that I used to play, mm-hmm. had the basic idea of you had characters whose sole job was to provide support roles, right?
Yep.
These were the entertainers who sat in the cantina and played their instruments, so your Wookiee, which had major fatigue, could come in and rebuff themselves by getting a relaxing music show at the cantina. Star Wars has been great in their games, and other things too, like you say, the cleric, right? In letting people experience the part of the game that's most important to them, right? The helper class in this, you know, we talked, I think it was last week, about the character in StarCraft that would paint the target.
Right.
You have that role in here. You have the resupply missions. That's your cleric providing the mana potions, right? In this case, the missiles that you need to be the bomber to take out the Imperial Dreadnought, right? The idea that you're building such a complete experience in a game to target all the different type of players, whether they're, you know, the crafters, the explorers, or the tanks, right? The killers. Mm-hmm. This is brilliant. This is on my list of having one day. I think it's important to get the full VR headset attached to my gaming rig first. So we have kind of a hierarchy of things. And still, Microsoft Flight Simulator is ahead of this, even though this will be great. I was watching a little bit of a video and a talk that Ian gave around Squadrons, and then a couple of other online feeds that I saw that said, this is TIE Fighters. These are X-Wings flying. It's hard. And I remember in Star Wars Galaxies when they finally introduced the ability to do space flight and space battles, it was hard because, you know, you're in full 360 three-dimensional space flying in combat,
right?
And putting the crosshairs on an enemy ship while you're rotating one way, they're rotating and flipping back another way, and tracking that target in real time, you know, it's hard. It's it's just hard. It's fun.
It's almost like a fighter pilot's a difficult job to do, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and it's the first time they enabled multiplayer ships in the game, it was great because you could not worry about the flying, right? Mm-hmm. You could be the guy in the gunner in the Millennium Falcon, right?
Yep.
And that was cool because then all you have to do is do the tracking because somebody else was dealing with all the rest of it. And it's that separation of duties, if you want to call it, right?
Sure.
That specialization that made the game so much more richer and fun. So I love this idea.
You know, especially in this time of social distancing and separation, it's games like this that make you have the opportunity to come together. And the reason why this really grabbed me at the end is the article closes with I try my best to keep everyone afloat, and so does everyone else. And in a year where there's been so much out of my control, playing support in this game has let me reclaim agency in an admittedly small way so I can help others. And it's like, you know, how fantastic is that for somebody that maybe is not the fighter pilot kind of person, but enjoys playing a social game with others, providing support, and actually being touched by the fact that a fighter would provide armed escort for him as a support ship to prevent others from taking him out as part. Yeah. Can you make a digital heart or something like that in the Star Wars game? Maybe.
You could fly one pretty easily because you got all the degrees of freedom that you need.
Probably so.
Well, I think they call it 6 degrees of freedom.
So. Something like that. So I'm jealous that this game is not in my future because, as I recall, this is on structures and platforms that I do not have at the moment, which is kind of unfortunate.
I know. But I can't believe they only released it on the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. What are you going to do, right? Now, something that is in my space and certainly been an attractive option for my kids, too, has been Minecraft.
Yes.
And a friend of the show, Andy, who couldn't make it today, did share this particular link, which was kind of like, this is interesting. And then we were like, this is really interesting, around a Minecraft mod that allows you to play Doom inside of Minecraft, right? We've seen that before. We've seen computers inside of Minecraft, right? Computers all the way down. So this one, though, and it took me a minute to recognize it. Michael, you caught on to it first. What are these sheep doing?
They're pixels, pretty much.
They're pixels, yeah.
This is so bizarre, and it's so funny. And we saw... over the last couple of weeks, lots of different examples. And I think one of them was, you know, on an old, I'll call it 2-bit screen, right? On an old cell phone, you could kind of play Doom. And here what they did is they literally filled a pen with hundreds, maybe thousands of sheep, and then changed the color of each sheep to reflect a pixel in the original Doom world, that you could then play Doom on this body of sheep. That's so bizarre.
You know, I guess if you had an infinite sized Minecraft pen, you could have
higher resolution,
high resolution sheep that could be used to be controlling a game.
Can like you imagine? Can you imagine? Doom. 1080p sheep. So you'd have to have, you know, I don't know, what is it? So it'd be 1920 sheep in one direction, 1080 in the other direction, and then that would give you the pixel perfect 1080p Doom environment of sheep.
Retina sheep. I love it.
Oh, so you're going to 4X it on me, man. Thanks.
I mean, why not, right?
That's hilarious.
All right. So moving right along, and I do mean moving right along, from fizz.org, and that's not F-I-Z-Z, the famous beer site. That is P-H-Y-S.
Physics. Oh, yes.
Physics. Yes. There is, and we've talked about this before, right, about battery life and the importance of having power where you need it, that there is a new device, and we've seen a couple of these show up from time to time, that would power sensors, wearable sensors, through kinetic energy from the person moving around, by the human body's movement itself.
So did this article make you think of the definition of the universe of slowly fading out to entropy, right? Because every single thing is consuming energy, right? In this case, it's generating energy from one source, the human body's physical kinetic movement, into a sensor array. And it's taking big energy and slowly filtering it down to small energy. That's what popped in my head. And I was like, you know, Let's say we did this with everything. Are we, the universe, slowly trying to live up to our potential of entropy by doing these types of things, right? We're taking energy from the sun and we're sucking it into plants that were slowly rotted and compressed into oil, plants and dinosaurs and other things. We're taking more energy from the sun and we're sucking it in to the food that we eat so that we can move to create the kinetic energy, right? We're taking this big concentrated mass of energy and distributing it.
Well,
not the angle you thought I was going to go on, did you?
no, I wasn't. But, you know, I am a fan of the second law of thermodynamics for sure. And I would react to that by saying, yes, we're transforming the nature. It's conservation of matter and energy. Right. So, you know, we're following all the laws of physics. Having said that, we're also taking advantage of them in slightly different ways. So the sun, you know, beaming down on our planet is used by plants, as you said, and a lot of it just gets beamed into things that escapes as heat and maybe not used. So here, this is a way that, just like the watches in the days of yore, having that little ball bearing in there that, as you moved around, you know, created enough friction that powered a capacitor that kept the watch going. Gosh, wouldn't that be nice and not have to charge watches, right, going forward?
So let me tell you, sorry, we got a rat hole for a few minutes on that one. So I've got the Series 6 and Apple Watch, and the betas over the last, since the summer for the watch and for iOS have been so good.
So good.
And I do mean that. Historically, I always have the horrible time in mid-July where I say, screw it, and I take betas off of everything and try to put it back to GA code because it's so bad. And this time, I didn't do that. So that when everything went GA with the watch and the operating system, what, a month and a half ago or so?
Yeah.
Early September, mid-September?
Yeah, about there, yeah.
I forgot to turn off the beta releases on my watch. Sorry, on my phone. Because you have a profile and you keep getting them. So I was on iOS 14.2 recently, which is not released GA yet. It's only in the developer and the public beta. And my Series 6 watch, which has been getting phenomenal battery life, suddenly was running down to 0 in 4 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah. and so, yeah, it would be really nice to have kinetic energy from my personal movement to actually keep that thing charged, because I said, okay, I can't back level the watch to a GA code.
Yep.
So I have to wait. So I ended up putting the beta profile on the new watch just so that I might have the chance of it surviving long enough for the new watch. It's 14.2 on the operating system for the phones to come out, which will probably end 7.1 or it's beta 7.03, I think, is what's on it.
Yeah, I think
no, it's
right.
7.04. Yeah. 7.04 is the beta that's on it. it would be nice to do that. So, sorry to rat hole, but sometimes you got to when it's an important topic like battery life on your watch.
Well, and it should be. I mean, this is one of the things that it will get better.
Yes.
And has a lot of promise. So this particular sensor was kind of funny too, because the nano generator that this described in this article says that you would need 100 square meters to power a 40 watt light bulb, which is probably bigger than most wearables.
Well, you know, for all the people who have been stuck at home during the pandemic and are not getting out and doing exercise, it might hit that soon.
Yeah. Well, let's hope not.
Let's hope not. Yeah, it's 7.1 that's running on my watch right now, and it's weird. Yesterday it was doing that. Today it lasted. It's at 66% now, which is better than normal, but still pretty bad.
Well, let's hope that gets sorted out pretty fast. Now, here's an interesting article, and we've talked about Schneider on security on a couple of occasions. In this case, we're talking about artificial intelligence, and we're talking about fooling it, fooling yourself here. In this case, about autopilots and Tesla's driver assistance systems by just injecting a couple of pixel perfect sheep, I guess, to cause traffic jams and other problems. And you just need a split second to do this. Now, thinking about this for a moment, you do want your autopilot to react to things that happen in a split second, because as a driver, and maybe not as frequent a driver as I used to be pre-COVID times, but as a driver, if the rabbit jumps out in the road in front of you, you don't have like 10 seconds to contemplate, oh, how big is that rabbit? That's a pretty, you know, brown rabbit. You need to react, right? So you want it to react pretty fast. But you also don't want malicious users to create scenarios where a billboard or some other electronic device, maybe hooked to somebody else's bumper or whatever, could cause your automotive experience to become less than satisfactory.
Yeah, what I really think is interesting about this story is it shows how much we still don't... I don't use the word no, because that's not the right phrase, but I'll use it anyway, sure. On how an AI works, right? Having explainability on an AI would allow us, in theory, to correct these types of problems. Because, as you say, having something fall off the back of the truck in front of me, I want my car to react immediately.
Yep.
Having a image float in front of my car because of somebody hacking the system for a split second, I don't want my car to recognize that, right? And it has to do with what are the things that are impacting the model and the actions the model is taking at the right time in the right manner, right? And so understanding explainability, being able to filter out bad data without filtering out anomalous events that are actual good data becomes critical. So this is an interesting thing. I thought it was kind of important, especially as more and more automakers are talking about improved autonomous driving, or not quite autonomous, but improved driver assist capabilities on the road to autonomous driving. Understanding that explainability, handling anomalous data correctly is going to be critical. And Schneider always finds really good stories like this. So this one's interesting. I definitely want to dig a little bit deeper on it.
Yep, let's do. Now, if you look down and see the ground, and if you look up, you'll see the sky, and I look at you and sing a song about up and down. So Adobe Photoshop apparently is now expanding its artificial intelligence with new ways of replacing skies with different sets of clouds and ominous and blue, bright blue skies and things like that. We've had a couple of examples of this sort of thing from a ML AI perspective on prior shows, but this is pretty powerful capability that is now allowing people to replace the background and make it be what you want it to be super easy.
What I'm really impressed by this, and these are a lot of the announcements that they did at their recent Adobe conference. I can't remember the name of the conference, but if you look at what they're doing, is they're really improving the overall use of AI in photo processing. And one of the other features that they've added is neural features that allow you to age or de-age somebody in a picture, which is really cool. And, you know, each of these individual things, sky replacement, age manipulation, are apps that we have seen over the last few years, yep. One-off apps. But actually bundling that into the base Photoshop is where it's going to get really, really interesting. And it shows the importance of the, I can't remember what they called it, but it's basically the watermark feature that they're doing to say the accuracy of the picture, right? Mm-hmm. Adobe and others have come together to say, hey, we want to be able to help people recognize when a photo has been manipulated. And so take all of that together with some of the really cool features that they're adding. You know, I'm not 20 anymore. But in Photoshop, I could probably look closer.
To 20?
to 20 with some of these new AI features, or I could, you know, brighten my teeth easily, right? But if you took a photograph of me and put it in Photoshop and use these AI features, setting that flag will be important because, you know, if you come to meet me after seeing that photo and you go, who's that old guy with the yellow teeth, right? it's important. And I really do like what they're doing here, though, to make photo improvement easier. And there was there's an iPad app that I use, and I'm going blank on the name of it, but they have a really, really good, and they actually were a design winner, I think, 2 years ago at WWDC, maybe even 3 years ago, 2 years ago, Pixelmator, that has a one-button AI-based photo improver that does things like white balancing, that does things like color, you know, color correction, shadow detection, things of that nature, and then allows you to see what the AI defined as the settings, and then you can tweak it a little bit more. So expose back to the explainability with Schneier. Explainability and understanding how an AI is making manipulation is critical. And being able to then do some of this really, really cool stuff is going to be great. And hair detection, edge detection on hair is another feature that they're using AI for. Really, I'm impressed.
Well, and that should be made super simple. I know from my prior experience, it's been a while since I've used Photoshop, that the magic wand tool to detect the borders of something, you know, left some things to be desired. And this is what's allowing the magic wand to be truly magic.
Yeah.
Right. Because now you're not really having to do much other than letting the neural engine do its thing.
Well, I know we are just about out of time. And
I know.
And there's two things I think we should hit on. One is the incredible video that came back from the OSIRIS mission on Bennu, where they actually showed now the I'll call it the sucker upper, the vacuum hitting the asteroid and pulling up the content from the asteroid that's going to be coming back to Earth, I think, in December for research. And then you and I both just had a blast at the beginning before we started the recording, watching the upcoming trailer to the new season of The Animaniacs.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be so much fun. I, you know, remember watching them a lot. And Pinky and the Brain is a favorite of mine for reals. And it's going to be interesting and fun to see this. Now, my problem, though, Michael, is how many more subscriptions am I going to add to already my burdening subscription space? Because there's so many things that are fun and good to see. And I've been binging my way through Lower Decks, you know, now on my 2-week free trial, which I'll probably wind up keeping. But, you know.
Well, we've got a triple play thing with Disney, Hulu, and ESPN so that I can watch my Bundesliga soccer matches.
Yep.
It's got Hulu. And
yeah, but weren't we supposed to be in a spot where we could break things up and then do them a la carte? And it was going
to
be less.
You remember there's two ways to make money in streaming video, bundling and unbundling. And they're doing both.
And you do both, and then you need both. And guess what? You've done more.
Exactly.
All right. Well, team, that is where we are for time. And I can hear the sound in the background that lets me know it is time to either change the laundry or get on to a next call. So
everybody have
join
a great.
Us again.
Yep. Over at.
Games
at work. Biz.
Bye. You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.